ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। टुडे वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम भगवद गीता एज इट इज चैप्टर 17 एंटाइटल्ड द डिविजन्स ऑफ फेथ टेक्स्ट 16 एंड 17। प्लीज रिपीट आफ्टर मी। मन प्रसाद सौम्यत्वम् मौनम आत्मविनिग्रहः भावसंशुद्धिरिति एतात् तपो मानसमुच्यते एंड सैटिस्फैक्शन सिंप्लिसिटी ग्रेविटी सेल्फ कंट्रोल एंड प्यूरिफिकेशन ऑफ वन्स एग्जिस्टेंस आर द ऑस्टेरिटीज ऑफ द माइंड। पर्पट To make the mind austere is to detach it from sense gratification. It should be so trained that it can be always thinking of doing good for others. The best training for the mind is gravity in thought. One should not deviate from Krishna consciousness and must always avoid sense gratification. To purify one's nature is to become Krishna conscious. Satisfaction of the mind can be obtained only by taking the mind away from thoughts of sense enjoyment. The more we think of sense enjoyment, the more the mind becomes dissatisfied. In the present age, we unnecessarily engage the mind in so many different ways for sense gratification, and so there is no possibility of minds becoming satisfied. The best course is to divert the mind to the Vedic literature, which is full of satisfying stories, as in the Puranas and the Mahabharata. One can take advantage of this knowledge and thus become purified. The mind should be devoid of duplicity and one should think of the welfare of all. Silence means that one is always thinking of self-realization. The person in Krishna consciousness observes perfect silence in this sense. Control of the mind means detaching the mind from sense enjoyment. One should be straightforward in his dealings and thereby purify his existence. All these qualities together constitute austerity in mental activities. 17th verse translation. This threefold austerity performed with transcendental faith by men not expecting material benefits but engaged only for the sake of the Supreme is called austerity in goodness. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama. So I would like to welcome everyone for the evening Bhagavad Gita class and would like to seek the blessings of devotees so that I could speak for my purification. So we are continuing with the 17th chapter and the present text constitutes about the austerity of the mind. In this regard, there is a pastime of Srila Prabhupada. Once Srila Prabhupada was on a morning walk with few of his disciples in Los Angeles. And they were all very senior disciples of Srila Prabhupada. And they were pacing up with Srila Prabhupada's speed during the walk and also asking questions, doubts. So there was one devotee who was not asking any question throughout the morning walk and he kept silent. And when the walk ended, Prabhupada was just entering into the car and there was little gap between the door and Prabhupada. So that devotee came in between there and he asked Prabhupada a question. Prabhupada, how one can be in Krishna consciousness? And Prabhupada, in a very simple one word answer, he told, desire. So it implies that if we have desire to be Krishna conscious, then we can be always Krishna conscious. And if we want to desire to be Maya conscious, then we can be Maya conscious. So it depends upon our free will that how and what we take to. Generally, we may think that what happens if we think or whatever our impressions are there in our mind. But there is a phrase which says that whatever our thought process, impressions and desires may be, the result is the words are the same. And whatever one speaks, they turn into the respective actions. And whatever one's actions are, they become their habits. And whatever habits they are, they constitute the character of the personality. And collectively, the character of such a group of people make the culture. So, if the desire is not properly dovetailed, then the culture will also not be fruitful, or what is according to the shastras or scriptures. So we see that the root of the culture lies in what kind of desire we have. So in today's world, we see all around us so much of sense gratification is promoted in different means. If you go out of the temple, everywhere there are billboards which are projecting different ads, and these ads create a necessity, a need in our life, although the need is not there naturally, but artificially the need is created and people are mad after it. People are hankering and later they lament for taking to that kind of life. And I still remember that 15 years back, when there was not so much of propagation for TV and internet, that life was still very peaceful, happy. There was no anxiety, at least in the life of students, the modern youth at least, if you see. But now, in today's day, TV, cinema, media, internet, ad, they are creating newer and newer problems for the modern youth. Since there are a lot of youth here, I am relating to you in that way. And if the desires at early age are not considered, then they fructify and they become the character of such a people in the later stage of life. So it's advised that at the very early age, early stage of life, one should be trained according to scripture, so that one will not have any problem later part of the life. So now we may think that, okay, desires are there, impressions are there, but how actually they affect us? Which part of our body is involved in this activity? So if we see, the most important part is played by the mind, which is an enemy sometimes and it is a friend also. And the total game which we play from morning, early morning till night, it's all the game of the mind. If the mind is properly dovetailed, tuned, then the problems can be avoided in our life. So, like in the computer, the language is 0 or 1. There are only two characters in which the data is stored and manipulated. Similarly, the mind has two functions, yes or no, whether to accept or reject. It's called sankalpa, vikalpa. So mind plays an important role in one's life, and the way the mind is being tuned, that results in one's activities, one's actions, and which are the causes for happiness and distress, which comes in every part of the life. So, in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says about how mind can be your best friend and also it can be your best enemy. So, we'll see some verses from there and try to discuss about that first.
उद्धरेदात्मनात्मानं नात्मानं अवसादयेत् आत्मेव्यात्मनः बन्धुरात्मैव रिपुरात्मनः.
वन मस्ट डिलीवर हिमसेल्फ विद द हेल्प ऑफ हिज माइंड एंड नॉट डिग्रेड हिमसेल्फ. द माइंड इज द फ्रेंड ऑफ द कंडीशन सोल एंड हिज एनिमी एज वेल. फॉर हिम हु हैज कॉन्कर्ड द माइंड इज द बेस्ट ऑफ फ्रेंड्स, बट फॉर वन हु हैज फेल्ड टू डू सो हिज माइंड विल रिमेन द ग्रेटेस्ट एनिमी. So, mind is the key player. If it is our friend, then everything is fruitful, what we do. If it is not, then we may be engaged in sinful activities. And in the other verses, it says that for one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility, and to such man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor, dishonor are all the same. So we see different yogis who are engaged in different systems of yoga. For them, the basic qualification which is recommended is to first control the mind. Without mind control, there is no other further step to go ahead. And Arjuna, in the same chapter, explains that how controlling the mind is a very difficult task. For example, we have in the past seen about tsunami. So the waves of the tsunami which come out from the sea, the speed of the wind which they create is about 400 to 500 miles per hour. The cyclone which occurred in US, Florida, that the speed was about 250 miles per hour. And in Bangladesh, every year there are cyclonic winds which come and they take away the roof from the house. They are also almost 200 miles per hour. So the speed of the wind is so raging that it causes so much of destruction. And Arjuna says in this chapter that controlling that kind of wind is easier than to control the mind. He says, Chanchalahi mana Krishna pramathi balava dhridam tasyam nigraham manye vayureva sadushkuram. For the mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate and very strong. O Krishna, and to subdue it, I think it is more difficult than controlling the wind. And Arjuna was not a common man like us. He was a very elevated soul and was a personality who existed in the Dwapar Yuga. That Yuga which was still very elevated than what the present age of Kali is. Still, Arjuna is saying that to control the mind is quite difficult for him. Then what we can speak about ourselves? It is very ridiculous to think of that. But Krishna gives a hope giving statement in the next verse. He says that just by practice you keep going on and one day you will achieve it. So having seen some of the characteristics of the mind, we will see some other features of how mind acts on or intelligence. King Rishabhdev, in the fifth canto, he instructs his sons about how one should not engage oneself in sense gratification and should not pollute his mind from the very beginning of his life. Rather, dovetail all his activities for purifying one's existence.
Nunam pramatta kurute vikarma yat indriya pritaya apranoti na sadhu manne yato atmanoyam asnanapi kleshada ashadeha.
When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activities. He does not know that due to his past misdeeds, he has already received a body which, although temporary in the cause of misery, actually living entity should not have taken on a material body. But it has been awarded the material body for sense gratification. Therefore, I think it not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again in the activity of sense gratification by which he perpetually gets material bodies one after another. If we consider a case, we all never wanted to be here, but we had a desire to enjoy separate from Krishna. And we utilized our free will and we all came here. And here Krishna provided us opportunity to enjoy as we wanted. And so we all have material bodies. There are 84 lakh species of material bodies which one can take to enjoy in this material world, until unless he reaches back to Godhead, the supreme abode of the Lord Sri Krishna. So sense gratification is always a problem for a jiva. In the model educational system, Jai Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagwan ki Jai. In the modern educational system, we see the academics or the curricular activities which are promoted, they all are designed in such a way that people mindset is always dovetailed towards sense gratification. They are taken away from the internal values which keep up building up their character. But on contrary to this, scriptures speak about how one should not get entangled in this material world, how one can get free from this, how involving in this material world is like a bondage, a bond which never breaks. And for those, sense gratification has become as the goal of life, for them it becomes like a madness, and that deludes his memory and he engages in sinful activities. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, dhyayato vishayan punsan sangasteshopajayate sangas sanjayate kamak kama krodha vijayate krodhat bhavati sammoha sammoha smriti vibhrama smriti bhramshat buddhinasho buddhinasha pranashyati. The flowchart has been given in Bhagavad Gita itself, that how just by contemplating on sense objects, dhyayato vishayan punsan sangat teshopajayate, one gets attachment towards the sense objects, sangat sanjayate kama, and that attachment towards the sense objects leads to lust, lusty desires, krodha, and that lust, if is not satisfied, it leads to krodha, anger. Krodhat bhavati sammoha, krodh, anger leads to delusion. Sammoha smriti vibhrama, and that delusion leads to bewilderment of memory. And when the memory is bewildered, it leads to fall down. So the whole cycle is explained, that how it basically starts from the root, that is dhyayato, just contemplating. It all depends upon what kind of desires we cultivate, and then from there the whole cycle starts. We may think that if I watch a movie, for example, nothing will happen to me,
But those impressions are still there, and that those impressions will lead to disaster later. For example, we must have, even myself, we have seen movies in previous part of our life, and if you try to forget also, it's quite difficult until unless we completely focus our mind on Krishna conscious activities. They always keep coming and attacking our consciousness. So it's very difficult to overcome that propensity. And also, in today's age, something as such is propagated that if one is very much into sense gratification, he is called the hero of the society. And but in previous ages, compared to this, this same personality or same activity was considered to be unfortunate. Those who were engaged in sense gratification, they were considered as unfortunate beings. But today, that is promoted, and the same philosophy is propagated all over, in all throughout media, and what nonsense we see. So we need to understand that in this material world, what keeps us binded always, those are our desires. And Maya Devi also allures us, Mother Nature, she allures us by providing some fruitful results and some droplets of happiness, saying that you will get this happiness, just stay here. And we also try to continue with it, and without knowing that, later we have to face the consequences. So we have to understand that sense gratification and the process of Krishna consciousness, which are like two parallel paths, they cannot go together. Either of the one we have to choose. So we have been hearing regularly about this, still we don't recognize that we have a problem with our mind. So there's a description of a pastime of King Chitraketu in 6th canto, and by discussing this it becomes more clear that how, although provided all kinds of happinesses of this world, still one cannot be happy. Maharaj Chitraketu was the king of the whole planet, and all his subjects were very happy under his rule. But he had one problem. The problem was that he wanted a son. For this reason, he landed up marrying 10 million wives. 10 million wives is a very big figure to just imagine also. But he wanted a son. That was a desperate need for him. And in that regard, he went on. But he never got a son. So his mind was always fighting this battle with between this duality of happiness and distress. He was always thinking that I will get happiness, harsh, if I get a son. If I don't get a son, there is a distress, shoka. So he was always, his mind was always between the two. Like, there's a verse which explains this, that mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshaye bandhaya vishaya sango muktya nirvishya manah. Mana eva manushyanam, the mind of the human being, the living entity, is the cause of bondage and the cause of liberation also. A mind which is absorbed in sense gratification or objects of senses is a cause of bondage, and the mind detached from sense objects is the cause of liberation. So here, in case of Chitraketu Maharaj, his mind was always absorbed in thoughts of getting the sun, and he was thinking that that will give liberation to his old dynasty. Ancestors will be liberated if they have a son, because that generation will go on, the dynasty will go on. But he was not accepting the destiny of the Lord, because after so much of trial, still he did not have a son, means that he was not destined to get a son. And once Angira Rishi and Narad Muni, they appeared at the site. Chitraketu Maharaj's background is that he was also a very great devotee of the Lord. So when they appeared, they told him that you are not destined to get a son. But he pleads them that you can benedict me that I can get a son. So Angira Rishi tells that, okay, you take the son, you will have a son. And from his first wife he had a son. So, and he was named Harshashoka. That son was named Harshashoka. And when he got the son, he avoided the other queens, just gave focus to the wife who gave birth to this child. And other ladies, they became envious and they wanted to kill this child, because he was the reason for all kind of problem which was created. So they gave poison to the child and they killed the child. And then Chitraketu Maharaj laments that I had a child, but now he is gone, he is of no use. And the same spot again, Angira Muni and Narad Muni, they appear and they speak to him, console him, and they speak to him the philosophy of transmigration of the soul. And then they gives life to the child, and he also becomes alive, and he speaks that you were the father for this short span of life, but I have gone through many fathers and many mothers in my whole cycle of birth and death. So there is no such permanent relationship in this material world. Relationships always keep changing. One day you are my father, and other day someone else is my father. So there is no, all relationships in this material world are temporary. As soon as this body is there, we are related, and once the body is gone, I have a new relationship, you have a new relationship. So hearing this, Maharaj Chitraketu gets enlightenment, and he decides that now I should give up this darkness of family life and surrender to Supreme Lord. And by the blessings of Angira Rishi and Narad Muni, he gets initiated with a mantra. And with that mantra, chanting this mantra, he goes about in the universe. And finally, by the benediction, he gets to get the darshan of Lord Anantasesh. After that, when he is moving the universe, he sees Lord Shiva and Mother Parvati embracing each other. And on that, he laughs. And Mother Parvati gets angry over it, and she curses him that he will take birth as a demon. Now, you all may wonder that why I am speaking all these things. There is no connection. Where is the connection between this? This Chitraketu Maharaj, later when he takes birth as a demon, Vritrasur, he establishes a principle of how one should be surrendered to the Supreme Lord and act for the will of the Lord, and not that willfully acting for oneself. Whatever is the will of the Lord, one should try to satisfy the will of the Lord. So, this Vritrasur, he has a fight with the demigods, and the demigods were defeated at once, and they go and take shelter of the Supreme Lord. Then the Supreme Lord tells him that you all go to Dadichi and ask him for his bones, from which a weapon named Thunderbolt, Vajra, can be prepared, and that can kill, that is only empowered to kill the demon Vritrasura. So in the purport we see that one should be non-duplicious in nature. That it is, one should be always work for the welfare of others. That point is stressed in the purport. So here also in Vritrasura's pastime, we see that Dadichi was not a old bedridden patient who was just about to die. He was a very young man in his youthful life, and still when demigods approached that if you give your bones to us, then only this demon can be killed and demigods can retain their kingdom. So Dadichi at once laughed at them, and later he recognized that it's a severe problem, and if by just giving up my life, if so many people can be benefited, then I am sure to do that. So that is a glorious quality of a Vaishnava, that a Vaishnava is always ready to dedicate his life for the welfare of others. So he gave up his body, and then from the bones the Vajra was made, and later Indra attacked and he killed the demon Vritrasura. Now these pastimes, we may think that how a demon and a demigod are fighting and things are very usual, as we see in the scriptures, is always the demigods win over the demons. But there are few lessons which we have to learn from this, that although Chitraketu Maharaj was the king of the planet, but still he had so much of problem with his mind. His mind was creating always a problem, that he was not contented with what situations he was blessed with. And gradually it led to transformation in his next life, and then how he perfected his life. Even we see in our day-to-day life that how if one is not completely focused in his desires, cultivating of desires, then one may cultivate wrong desires, and that may lead to one's disaster also. So there is one more pastime which appears in the 11th canto of Avanti Brahman. Avanti Brahman was a very rich Brahmana, but also engaged in business. So he had lot of wealth, and he was a very miserly person. So since he was very miserly, his family members were very much annoyed with him. And it so happened that since he was not utilizing his funds for welfare of the society, some thieves came and they took some of his wealth, and slowly he lost all the wealth because he was not paying obligations to the 5 demigods which he had in his house. And he became a beggar. At this point, his family members rejected him. And when he was rejected by his family members and was having nothing to survive, then he understood and realized that how renunciation is the best way of life. And at that point, he sings a song, and in which he expresses that happiness and distress were always a part of my life, but this happiness or distress was not due to my family members or due to demigods or due to my past karma or effect of time. Rather, this happiness and distress were due to my uncontrolled mind. Since my mind was not controlled and it was not dovetailed properly in proper consciousness, so always this mind has created a problem for me. And then finally he realizes that and he engages himself in devotional service of the Lord. So we can see that happiness and distress will always be there in our life, but the way we perceive it or accept it in our life, that makes a difference. Like in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it says that Matra Sparshastu Kaunteya Shitoshna Sukha Dukkada Agama Payano Nitya Samti Dikshaswa Bharata. As the summer and winter seasons come, heat and cold come and go, that as respect and disrespect come in our life and they leave, similarly, we have to perceive things of happiness and distress in our life. And that will help us to proceed further, or else we'll be stuck up there. So, after hearing so much from scriptures and from devotees, we may think that how this desire, proper desire, can be cultivated. There's a pastime, there's a story narrated by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur that there was one marriage party which had to go to the bride's house by the morning, and it was evening time and they all boarded the boat and they planned with the boatman, and he said that okay, I'll take you by morning there, because they had to reach for the rituals. So the boatman also started rowing the boat, and seeing this, everyone slept in the night. And when it was morning, they all found themselves at the same spot, and the boat did not move even an inch. And they were very annoyed, and they were shouting at him, "Why? What happened? How the boat has not moved?" And the boatman said that whole night I was rowing, but I don't know what happened. It did not move. So one of clever persons in that whole group, they found out that the boatman did not remove the anchor of the boat. Since the anchor was there, although he was rowing, the boat did not move. So Maharaj, Radhanath Maharaj, speaks on this aspect that we may be cultivating new desires, good desires, in the path of devotional service. But if we are holding back the past ones, the past activities, sinful activities, then our boat of devotional service will not move. Like suppose someone is following the path of devotional service, but he is still engaged in some kind of sense gratification. Then until unless he comes out of it, it's not possible for him to make an advancement in that path. Since his anchor is stuck up there, so the boat of devotional service will not move. And so one has to take to the process of devotional service very seriously. Then only the boat can move and we can advance in spiritual life. Or else we'll be placed there only where we were. Now, we all have one biggest problem, that is our anarthas. Lust, greed, anger, illusion, pride, false ego and all. So, we are always planning and thinking that how we can get rid of this. But until unless we pray to the Lord that please remove this distress from my heart and place me properly in devotional service, the proper attitude of prayer and proper desiring, if it is not there, then we will not make advancement in spiritual life. And here it says that silence means that one is always thinking of self-realization. So many impersonalists and other philosophers, they say that maunam, being silent, is very much fruitful, not to speak. But as Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Instruction, the first verse, that this kind of attitude is like a toad croaking of the toad. Because we keep on croaking, but we don't know the proper philosophy. Because urge to speak is always there. We always want to speak something. But if you don't want to, if you don't speak of Krishna consciousness, then we'll speak nonsense. So that nonsense is explained to compared to us the croaking of the toad. And that invites the snake, which is death. So one should always think of engaging one's senses properly in the service of the Lord. There is a beautiful bhajan, Vaishnava bhajan, sung by a great acharya, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in which he explains that how the mind has gone through many ups and downs, but still the mind is not able to understand that. He sings, I'll read the translations. O my dear mind, this bhajan is, O re mon, bhalo nahi lage sansar. In that, he says that I don't like this material world at all. It is simply filled with the suffering of birth, death, disease and old age. Besides all this suffering, tell me now that good thing could possibly be found here. We see around us janam mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anudarshanam, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. So always, every step, there is vipada. Padam padam yat vipadam. So, we cannot escape this cycle of birth, old age, disease and that. Everyone has to go through. Once one has taken birth, he has to become old, he will get diseased and finally death will encounter him. So apart from that, what new, what good thing is there in this world? He is praying to the mind. Further he says, wealth, followers and family members, they can never really belong to anyone. For a time they are together and afterwards they all drift apart. We see that in our school days we have some friends, in our college days we had some friends, and then when we are working in the corporate we had some friends. But as the life progresses, hardly one or two friends stay together till the end of the life. Rest all are drifted away. Even the relationships in this world, they also are for namesake. For example, we have a cousin, brother, sister, mother, father. But when this body is destroyed, ultimately these are all list of names and nothing else. So there is no permanent relationship as such in this material world. Wealth. We may gather a lot of wealth, but we cannot take anything with us when we die. All these relationships which you would love to hold on to, and we try to hold on to it. That is a kind of subtle sense gratification. None of them will remain for long, my dear mind. Oh brother, know it for sure that all these temporary things are flimsy and perishable. They will not stay forever. The lifespan of one living in this world is extremely short, and even that gradually decays more and more until one beholds Yamraj hovering nearby. Afflicted with continuous diseases and lamenting in heartbroken grief, his consciousness thus degrades more and more. Finally, one meets his downfall and he again suffers the calamity of separation from his dear kinsmen. Just see here, my dear brother, don't go for this mixed pain and pleasure of so-called material happiness. For it is actually the source of all your troubles. If this is a real situation, then why have you become the slave of Maya just on account of this miserable so-called happiness? We can see that this material sense gratification is something like a scratch, something like an itch. Let's suppose we have an itch, and if one is perfectly intelligent and utilizes intelligence, then he takes some medicine and applies on it. And slowly or gradually, the medicine works and that itch is gone forever. But one's mind, if has taken over the intelligence, then he keeps on scratching it. Till that point, it becomes red and blood peeps out of it. And there is no more cure possible through that way. So hankering for sense gratification and material pleasures in this material world, which is a temporary thing, is a big illusion created by the material energy, Maya Devi. And one should understand that one should come out of this illusion and take to the thought process of intelligently asking question to oneself that why am I suffering and how one can get rid of suffering. Just become little thoughtful for once and reflect back on your own life story. How many demoniac temptations you were motivated by? Simply to get a little sense gratification, how many unlimitedly sinful acts have you committed? So now just see the result. The only gain in the long run is your certain death. And many of the prayers are there. So we see from the prayers of these acharyas that they are not writing these bhajans for submitting their indesperate situation. They are already elevated souls. They are liberated souls. They just came to guide us in our spiritual life. These bhajans are reflections of our mind, actually. How, if one puts a mirror before us, we can see in that mirror the images of what is there in our heart. Although it is very difficult for us to understand that and to accept the reality that this material world is a place of suffering, still we don't want to accept it. We still go on pampering the mind that we'll be happy here, we'll be happy here. That is the biggest illusion created by the material energy. So then how one should get rid of this uncontrolled mind? The path which is well spoken in scriptures is of self-realization. So self-realization means understanding our relationship with Krishna, the Supreme Lord, and how to attain Him. That is self-realization. Other than that, whatever path we take to as self-realization is just a bogus thing and it will not lead to the supreme goal. And we see in the past history from the scriptures itself that how devotees have engaged their different propensities in service of the Lord and they have perfected life. Glorious examples are there of Amrish Maharaj, Save Mana Krishna Padaravindayor. He always engaged his mind in thinking of the Supreme Lord, his feet to walk into the temple, his head to bow down before the deities, and in other aspects, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu also, there is a quote. Which says that when one's body, a person acting in Krishna consciousness with his body, mind, intelligence and words is a liberated person even within the material world, although he may be engaged in many so-called material activities. We may be in this material world and we may engage in this material activities because we have to live here. We have to engage in some other activity, some way or other. Since our body, mind, intelligence and words are engaged in service of the Lord, so devotees are known as liberated person. Iha yasya harir dasya karmana manasagra nikhilaswapi avastheshu jivan mukta sauchyate. There is one beautiful prayer by a great devotee in the Sri Sampradaya, King Kulashekhar. He is praying to his mind, like we may thinking that we have performed so much of sinful activities and then how we can be saved from all these sins, and if so much of sinful reactions are still to come on us, then is it the Lord there to save us and take us away from this material pool? Then this prayer speaks and it gives a hope giving statement to us. Ma bhir manda mano vichinte bahuda yame ischiram yatanam naivami pravanti paparipava swami nanu shridharam alasyam vepaniya bhakti sulabham dhyayasvanarayanam lokasya vasanapanodanakaro Dasasya kim nakshama. O foolish mind, stop your fearful fretting about the extensive torments imposed by Yamraj. How can one enemies, the sinful reactions you have accrued, even touch you? After all, your master is not a supreme lord, the husband of Goddess Sri. Cast aside all the hesitation and concentrate your thoughts on Lord Narayan, whom one very easily attains through devotional service. What can that dispeller of whole world trouble not do for his own servant? This verse says that Yamraj is there waiting to take our life from our body, but we have great fortune of taking shelter of Supreme Lord Narayan. And if someone has taken shelter of the Supreme Lord, and he becomes a servant of the Lord, and the Lord will always take care of the servant. So why are you worrying about that? The Lord will come and save you from all material anxieties at the time of death. Finally, to conclude with, there's a prayer offered by our Acharya Raghunath Das Goswami, is Manasiksha, in which he is praying to the mind that how the mind has to be always engaged in the service of the Lord, in the service of the Vaishnavas, in the service of Brajavasis, the Dham, Shastra. So I would only like to take one prayer. He says that, O mind, in order to attain the direct service of the two divine lovers, Shishi, Radha, Giridhari, in the company of their friends, every day you must constantly drink with Sri Rupa Goswami the five nectars of worshipping them. Five nectars of worshipping them, chanting their names, meditating on them, hearing about them and bowing down before them. And every day you must worship Govardhan Hill. In this, I have chosen this particular prayer because in this the process of Krishna consciousness is presented briefly. Worshipping the Lord, it's a process of devotional service. Even when the deities are there, we are doing deity worship in some way or other. Like if someone is getting flowers, fruits for the Lord, that is also deity worship. Because one is helping the pujaris to perform deity worship. Chanting their names. The process itself given by Lord Chaitanya is to chant Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. This Mahamantra is also the cure for uncontrolled mind. Just by chanting the holy names of the Lord, one can control the mind also. Then meditating on them. When one meditates on the supreme form of the Lord, then other meditations of the material world, they will not come and obstruct our flow. Hearing about them. The process of devotional service starts from Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. So hearing is the first process. Hearing about the glories of the Supreme Lord and His devotees. And bowing down before them. Why we want to bow down to someone? It's an act of surrender. It's an act of taking shelter. Offering respect to someone. Like someone enters the temple, they offer obeisances to the Supreme Lord here and also to Prabhupada. So it's an act of surrender, shelter, taking shelter. We are seeking for a shelter. So if one has to do all these activities every day, then one's mind will never attack him when his desires has to flow towards the Supreme Lord. So to conclude, from the beginning we have seen that how the materialistic civilization is propagating sense gratification, and on the other hand the scriptures are saying no to it. Then we have seen the science, how the mind functions, sankalpa and vikalpa. Then we saw how actually the mind starts with contemplating on sense objects and it leads to gradual fall down of the jiva. Then we saw from the pastime of Chitraketu Maharaj and Vitrasur that how uncontrolled mind leads to problems, and then how glorious are the Vaishnavas that they have taken to the welfare of all living beings. Finally, we saw some prayers from Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur in the bhajan, Ore Man. And to conclude with, we have seen different prayers offered by different devotees to the mind and to the Lord, that how one can be saved from this material pool. So once our desires are cultivated in proper consciousness and dovetailed in proper direction, then self-realization is possible. One can overcome duplicity towards others. One can detach one's activities, one's mind from engaging sense gratification and train oneself properly in Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantra Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Now we will have Shayan Darshan Kirtan. So devotees are requested to participate in that. Thank you.